So hey everybody, thanks for coming back to Voices from the Frontlines. This is your host Eric Mann, and I'm very happy to do the show, and really happy that you all are pretty regular listeners, and I'm kind of proud of the people that listen to this show. Just before I came in, I was talking to Alan Minsky, the program director here, and he was pointing out that in radio Channel 4 in England, they have a tendency to keep running the same stories over and over to sort of cycle them. And I thought, well, of course, like today's show is going to be about Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning, and the great contribution she has made to our history, and try to learn more about it from Jeff Patterson, who's going to be talking to us, Bradley Manning 101. So, hey, everybody, I'm going to be on the air with Jeff Patterson. Are you on, Jeff?
Yes, thanks for having me.
Oh, sure, Jeff.
Sure.
Jeff, I'm really happy that you're on the show with us. Voices from the Frontlines is a show that focuses on people who are doing work on the front lines, who are actually trying to make something happen, who have demands, who have things that our listeners need to do. And certainly this whole issue of Bradley Manning and then Chelsea Manning and the tremendous implications this trial and this continuing event for the next many, many years is so important to talk about. I know that you've gone back and have worked on this as well as other really important anti-war work for many years. Why don't you actually take us back to the beginning? Because some of us, like, really know this case well, and others of us, like myself, do not. Take us back to square one. Where does Bradley Manning, who becomes Chelsea Manning, how does he come on the stage of history?
Well, I guess the beginning for me, I'm the project director of a group called Courage Dresus, and we support U.S. Military service people that are in trouble for acts of conscience. Some of these individuals went to Canada to refuse to deploy Iraq and Afghanistan. Others that take up a lot of our time these days are conscientious objectors, helping them file for discharges from the military as conscientious objectors. Back in May of 2010, we heard that a young man was arrested in Kuwait, arrested in Iraq, taken to Kuwait, for releasing a video called Collateral Murder, which depicts the killing of innocent Iraqis by U.S. forces in Baghdad in 2007. And we started trying to figure out what we could do for that person. We finally got word through his military attorneys, and we were eventually able to hire a civilian legal defense team of his choosing. Bradley Manning eventually was charged with releasing State Department cables that exposed corruption around the world, and also significant action reports from Iraq and Afghanistan that uncovered thousands of deaths that were not accounted previously. And on June of this year, June 3rd, he was court-martialed, and that ended recently a three-year fight for justice for Bradley. He was sentenced to 35 years confinement, and he's served over 3.5 years already. We think it's a complete injustice, given that of all the crimes that Manning exposed, he's the only one that's serving any time, the messenger. This is outrageous, and we're not going to let that injustice stand.
Well, I'm just going to tell you one thing when I come back. As you know, that as I understand it, reading some of the stuff, he's been sentenced to 35 years. He's eligible for parole, as I understand it, within 10, including 3 of those could be for so-called time served, which is, you know, possibly 7 years from now. But obviously, before we get to those numbers, which are enormous numbers, I mean, 3 years, 7 years, 35 years, you've been with him in the last 3 years. What's been the impact of on you for doing this work, on your organization, and your relationship with him?
Well, I would say it's been an honor to be working on his behalf. We took a leap of faith back in July of 2010 when we started the support network that eventually raised his military defense team and has done political action around the world. And we didn't really know, you know, who we were talking about there. And, you know, we kind of got lucky that we actually ended up working with, you know, who I thought came to find was, you know, a person who cared so deeply about government transparency and the value of human life that he was willing to sacrifice his life, is freedom to give that information to the public and then have a belief that good would come of it, that people would actually take that information and do something good with it in the hopes that it would be harder for the U.S. to launch another war in the future. Now, maybe all of his hopes haven't come to fruition, but he certainly has helped the American people and the people of the world to understand what actually happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, I can't keep speaking too much longer without acknowledging that, you know, Bradley Manning, the day after he was asked, you know, released a statement that he has transitioned to female and that he'll be called Chelsea Manning going forward. So, of course, we're respecting her wishes, and we've renamed the Bradley Manning Support Network the Private Manning Support Network. And part of our work will be to demand appropriate health care services for her in a military prison at Leavenworth, Kansas.
Well, we're going to come back to that in a minute because that's very important. I mean, one thing, when we look at the impact of people's lives, this system is, to say the least, very hard to change. I mean, it is an imperialist system. It's a system that carries out wars that, I mean, Daniel Ellsberg did a phenomenal, courageous thing of getting the Pentagon Papers out, but that didn't stop the bombing of the Vietnamese people. So I think that Private Manning, Chelsea Manning's courageous acts can be best understood by its impact on the movement for a while, not necessarily yet its impact on the United States government, which is a whole nother bear. So why don't we go back to Chelsea Manning's impact on the movement over the last 3 years?
Well, if you look at back in 2010, there wasn't much of an anti-war movement left. And for this young person to stand up and make a conscious decision that I'm going to risk and probably expect to spend most of my life in prison for doing this, that was a heroic act that mobilized millions of people to take a stand, to hit the streets, to organize and to, share. You know, not only here's a person facing prison time, but let's take a second look at what it is that she risked her life to expose. The documents that uncovered corruption of U.S. corporations in Haiti, to the tens of thousands of people killed in Iraq and Afghanistan that the U.S. Had never acknowledged before, the innocent civilians. You know, and sort of give us a reason to take a look and to care about such things. You mentioned, you know, your audience is big into action. I'd like to just underscore the best thing that we can do today for Chelsea, formerly Bradley Manning, is to go to bradleymanning.org and sign the White House petition. We've launched a petition in conjunction with Amnesty International calling for President Obama to pardon or at least reduce the sentence, the time served. And this isn't just a petition, but it's actually a legal filing that our attorney, David Coombs, is filing this week as well. So that's one, this is going to be our first step in the sort of the post-trial situation of winning justice for Private Manning.
Well, let me ask you this while we're on this, and we're listening to Jeff Patterson. And tell us the name of your group again, Jeff.
I'm the project director of Courage to Resist, and I am part of the steering committee of the Private Manning Support Network.
And Courage to Resist, we'll just keep hopping around. Frank Durrell, a mutual friend, spoke very highly of you and said you yourself had some courage to resist. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, then we'll go back to Private Manning.
Well, I joined the Marine Corps when I was 18. After 4 years of serving in the Marine Corps, from Philippines and Korea to Japan, I realized I wasn't a Marine. I didn't want to kill people. I didn't have the bloodlust that was necessary for the position. I was ordered to deploy to Iraq in 1990. I refused. I filed for a discharge of a conscience objector. The military told me I was not sincere enough, and I ended up in prison for continuing to speak out and refusing to deploy. And the lesson I learned from that is I had some public support there in Hawaii, where I was, and they helped me get a great attorney. And that made all the difference between me going to prison for a good amount of time and me being able to leave the military. And so that's what Courage to Resist sort of does. Is we help people have a first-rate civilian legal team, and also we build public support to give them sort of the personal support and also the financial support to get through a pretty difficult process in their life, and sometimes the most difficult thing they'll ever do in their life.
In terms of your own life, you started when you were 18. I'm sure when you joined the Marines, you thought this was, without knowing your family background, an amazing experience for you. I assume you went in with high aspirations and believed that you were, as they told you, that you were part of a very elite, the few, the proud, the Marines, that you were from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. You were going to fight our nation's battles and kill everybody in the interest of freedom. When did the light bulb go off for you?
You almost know the whole song.
Yes, I do. I could have kept it going, actually. I actually do a lot of writing about it, also the Pledges of Allegiance and America the Beautiful, and I go back and, you know, check out all these songs. They're pretty brilliantly constructed, right? I mean, they're, they're not stupid how they write these songs. So how does the 18-year-old Jeff Patterson start evolving to the 22-year-old Jeff Patterson? Because it's in some ways a microcosm of Bradley Manning and Chelsea Manning's own journey.
Well, 18-year-old Jeff didn't have a lot of resources, didn't have a lot of options. Single mom, a small town in the central California Valley, didn't have a car to go to school, couldn't get a job. And here was a guy in a very shiny uniform that had answers to all those life questions I was facing. And it sounded like a good deal. And I was moved by the uniform and by the songs and partly that you were singing there. And he asked me where I wanted to be and you know, what kind of job I wanted. And I told him, well, I just want to be a Marine. And I want the Marines to figure out where I'm most needed and put me in that job. That was my outset. And I thought it would be wrong for me to take some kind of bonus. I thought that would be something that would be sort of cheating. And that I was a Marine and I was going to do it and not sort of hedge my bets with some bonuses or guaranteed jobs or any kind of nonsense like that. That was my thinking. 4 years of seeing our interactions with the local populace in Okinawa and the Philippines and Korea and being part of being in the middle of a coup in the Philippines between different the new Aquino government and the previous Marcos government. And,
right.
And seeing people die over these issues and driving home that, you know, if I was going to kill somebody, I would want to know that I was absolutely sure that that was the right thing. And when I was ordered to deploy to Iraq back then, our pep talks were about going over there and killing camels and stealing people's gasoline and all kinds of nonsense. I didn't have that certainty that we were going over there to do anything good. That certainly no good would probably come of it. I was a artillery controller, and it was my job to assemble fuses on the artillery. Some of our artillery rounds were battlefield tactical nuclear warheads at the time, and they've since been discontinued. But I was the guy in the battalion that was certified, trained to set the fuse on this thing. And my commander says, came up to me. He was very excited that, he said, well, this is a great honor for you, Patterson, because if anything goes wrong over there, it's going to be up to you to nuke all the rankheads is was his quote. And people in the room overheard that, and they started jumping up and down and like, nuke them, nuke them, nuke them, and there's sort of like a war dance going on. And it was sort of at that moment that I no longer became a Marine, because I realized that I would never follow that order. And if I was never going to follow that order, why would I put together fuses for white phosphorus artillery rounds? Or why would I set the fuses for landmine dispersing artillery rounds? All these things were part of my job. And if I wasn't going to do that, why would I even raise my rifle to shoot at somebody that I wasn't certain was my enemy? So that was the turning point. But it took me years to get to that point and a pretty extreme challenge by my commander to finally snap me out of this haze of following orders.
Well, that's pretty great. And you're listening to the voice of Jeff Patterson, who works with Courage to Resist and also the Bradley Manning and now Private Manning Support Committee. I'm always interested in, the individual, the roles of individuals like Bradley Manning. And at the time, I was, during the 60s, I was an organizer with Students for Democratic Society, and I was working in the black community in Newark, and we were mainly organizing around low-income poverty and police brutality and slum housing. But I was approached by some people that said, oh, you should also be doing more against the war in Vietnam, and, which I was very interested in doing. So what you should do is go into a draft board, and when they ask you to stand up and take the oath, you should stand up and denounce the war and ask everybody to walk out. So, not paying a lot of attention, I thought this was a great idea, so I went down there. And back then, there was no security about letting you in. I think they figured anybody who was going to come in wanted to be in the draft board. So they, sure enough, waited to get to me to take my oath. And I stood up and said, you know, I've really been thinking about this, and I don't want to fight in this imperialist war. I think this war is a war against poor people. It's a war against black people. I don't see what we... Why do we want to deny the Vietnamese their right to have a decent life? I'm not enlisting. I'm walking out. And to my amazement, this black brother follows me out, says, I agree. We're out of here. So we walk out. I go, oh, my God, I had not anticipated this. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, actually, I'm an organizer. I wasn't drafted, and I didn't know what to do because I had no anticipation that you were going to do this. So he says, well, that's okay. I don't care who you are. I don't want to do this. So I called the late Lenny Wineglass, who was a great, great lawyer who did work for Mumia Abu-Jamal and other stuff, and we rushed over to Lenny's office. I said, Lenny, I found this guy who doesn't want to go to Vietnam. What do we do? So Lenny represented him. And this guy also had the courage to resist. And Lenny, just like you said, he was a great lawyer. His mother was adamant. His mother was totally on his side. And somehow they got him off. And I've known the late Len Weingrass until he died several years ago. And so for 40 years, every time I see Lenny, every 5 years, he says, Eric, I want you to know, every time I see that guy, he still says, whoever that kid was who came in the draft board, thanks a lot because he saved my life. So the organizing we do matters, right? I mean, it does matter about a Jeff Patterson. It does matter about that one black man who leaves. And it does matter about Chelsea Manning, because in some ways history is made by individual people having the guts to do things.
Well, you know, I've had the honor of working full-time for Courage to Resist 8 years now. We've been able to help hundreds of people with U.S. service members with relatively simple and relatively easy cases. But we've had 40-odd people face military trial. I've been to at least a dozen of those military trials. And we always, our work has always been beneficial to the individual. Most of the time, we reduce prison sentences. So instead of 2 years, sometimes people go to prison for 6 months. Sometimes if they're facing 6 months, we can keep them out of prison altogether. We don't always win. But when people do go to prison because of their beliefs, they're stronger for it, meaning that they can endure that prison sentence knowing that people support them on the outside and that they're there for a reason. They're there for doing the right thing in the middle of an illegal, immoral war. So, you know, it's been a great experience for me to actually sort of turn some of that personal history into a full-time job. And we've been lucky to have tens of thousands of people around the country financially contribute to allowing this organization to exist. Because, you know, obviously there's not a whole lot of organizations that do the work that we do. There are certainly some really great ones, like the Center of Conscience and War in Washington, D.C., and our allies with the GI Rights Hotline. But as far as, supporting and trying to throw the resources at these harder cases where there's a lot at stake, like Private Manning's case, or even the case of Kimberly Rivera, a young woman that's currently in prison for having gone to Canada with her children and husband in objection to the Iraq War and recently deported from that country and had to face a military trial for desertion. And she's in prison now, and she's pregnant. And we're hoping to fight to get her released so she doesn't have to have her child in the military prison.
Well, Jeff, I'm going to still keep you on for a few more minutes. How do people reach Courage to Resist? Because you talked about needing support and wanting people to know more about your work. How do they do that?
Courage to Resist is at couragetoresist.org. And as far as Bradley, Chelsea Manning, bradleymanning.org. And all that stuff is updated every day.
Well, that's great. And I have to say something good about Google. I mean, You don't have to know everything to just go back up and say courage to resist. You'll get all the information. And from there, you know how to get in touch with them and make sure you do it. Chelsea Manning's future. And again, what we can do to help. Jeff, I want to end with sort of this conversation about prison, which shouldn't be sort of underestimated. I mean, to start with, Private Manning's been in prison for almost 3 years. What have been the conditions, her imprisonment? And then let's talk about what the struggle is going to be about prison conditions in the future. But let's give our listeners a minute to understand what the last 3 years in prison have been for her.
Well, when Private Manning was arrested, she was held in an outside metal cage in Kuwait for a number of days, exposed to the environment. And the point there was to break Private Manning, to get her to cooperate with the military's investigation, not only to into what she had done, released documents of WikiLeaks, but also to gain information on WikiLeaks in general, and to testify against Julian Assange. And that didn't work. They transferred her to Quantico Marine Base in Virginia, where they I'm not going to say torture, meaning they didn't stick knives or something, but they subjected her to illegal, extreme isolation in order to break her. It was deemed illegal by the military judge, even in this case. And it was brutal. It took a million people signing petitions, hundreds of us being arrested at the White House and marching on the military base at Quantico, Virginia, engaging in civil disobedience, harassing President Obama at fundraising speeches before those extreme, brutal, and illegal conditions ended. And, the last couple of years at Leavenworth, they haven't been brutal. They've treated her appropriately for the most part. Until this last week, when Bradley Manning announced that after years of thinking about this, two supporters, she asked that he be referred to as a female, and the name Chelsea. At this time, the commander of the confinement facility there declared that no special treatment, no medical, no health care whatsoever will be given in this regard. He joined the military as a male, and that's it. And this is a military facility, and end of discussion. So part of our work will be advocating for her rights to appropriate health care in the Leavenworth, Kansas military facility. And that's all going to happen in the context of us continuing to push ahead with this petition in front of President Obama for a pardon. And, of course, we face long odds, but people should hold the president accountable for his campaign promises of supporting whistleblowers, of being an open, transparent, in his words, the most transparent government in American history. He should be held accountable for those promises, and he could salvage some of his reputation by doing the right thing by Private Manning, someone who actually took him at his word. We have a clemency petition in front of the convening authority coming up. Next year, we'll be in front of the Military Court of Appeals. We have at least four issues where the military judge overlooked constitutional guarantees and helping the prosecution gain a conviction against Manning on Espionage Act-related charges. We have pretty good odds in those regards. So we're hoping to win this case. It's going to be a failure of our movements and of our organizing efforts if we have to rely on a military pardon or a military parole board 7 years from now to dictate whether Manning is still in prison or not.
Well, let's stay there a minute. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Front Lines. I'm talking to Jeff Patterson, and he's doing work with Courage to Resist. We're talking about the struggle, the continuing struggle of Private Manning. And one thing I want to talk about is, obviously, President Obama has turned out to be, well, I shouldn't say obviously, President Obama has turned out, in my opinion, to be not just a phenomenal disappointment, but a phenomenal misrepresentation, perhaps consciously, for those of us who worked, speaking for myself, aggressively for his election in 2008, not that my work was very influential, but multiplied by millions and millions of people who gave money, who, this was a man who ran to some degree as a sort of a shadow Martin Luther King, which we'll get to. He ran as a peace candidate. He ran as an environmental candidate, as a women's candidate. He ran to be the anti-Bush. he made, you know, John McCain said that Obama's nickname for me is George Bush, which is a good joke because it's true. I mean, he just constantly said it. I want to break with the policies of the Bush administration. But who would have thought, and I'll say this, not you, that he would turn out to be such a cruel man, such a, not like a weaker version of his inclinations, but in so many ways, a reversal of it. So here you'd have, you know, it may be an interesting point that Private Manning in some way was encouraged by a belief that the government wanted people to do more courageous things, wanted people to come forward, only to be treated in the most phenomenally severe way.
I would underscore that point. I know for a fact that Private Manning actually did believe that. You can call him naive, and that's probably true. But back then, he was 22 years old. He didn't have a lot of exposure to the world. He was looking at these horrible things within the classified information that it was his job to review. And in his ears was ringing the president and his recent promises to be the most transparent president, to protect whistleblowers. And it is actually in that context where he released this video showing innocent civilians being mowed down by Apache helicopter gunship, releasing documents that expose what our coalition forces were actually doing in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I want to underscore that no person on earth was killed as a result of these releases. The government proved that harm happened, but this harm was some of people's careers were set back because the documents released. Money was expended in reacting to the releases, but no actual physical harm, meaning hurt. So nobody was shown to be actually hurt. And that's the irony here. 35 years for advancing the public good through these disclosures without any significant downside. To have, you know, have this young person, you know, facing the majority of her life in prison for doing what she felt was the right thing to do in a crazy illegal war. It's the 35-year sentence was just unbelievable to us sitting in court, you know, holding our breath for the judge to read her ruling.
Well, Jeff, I'm going to end with something on this and get your last remark. Ending with the issue of Bradley Manning's sexual identity and, you know, and I identify now as Chelsea Manning. I mean, one of the things that's, I think, you know, as life continues to evolve is the issue of gender identity. I work at an organization called the Labor Community Strategy Center. We have, you know, we began with a very anti-racist, anti-corporate, anti-imperialist politics, and then moved always with a women's liberation politics, and then moved to queer liberation politics. And now there's just a constantly evolving understanding of gender identity. So in some way, what's really interesting, and this is an area where it's in no means my strong suit, but I think in some ways it's not just fascinating, but important that here's a case that is just understood as a man, Private Bradley Manning, taking on a system, joining the army, and then getting in trouble and doing all the right things. You know, it follows a certain script. And then right at the end for us, or the beginning, he says, oh, by the way, I like to be called Chelsea Manning. Well, that's not a minor point. It sort of throws something into the conversation that is distracting in the good sense of the word, is confusing in the good sense of the word, is disorienting in the good sense of the word. So I just think that there's something hopeful about all this, that, you know, he threw a curve to the system and ended up being she, and now they got another thing they got to deal with in their lap.
Well, you know, I think you put a very positive spin on it. You know, there's a negative spin as well. It is, you know, our supporters run the political gamut from listeners of your show to Republicans on the libertarian side of things that support Ron Paul and whatnot. So, you know, it's not been 100%, you know, sort of politically positive. And we're dealing with plenty of Facebook, friends and backers that are saying, you know, we're not going to support this person anymore. This is outrageous. I'm not going to, you know, ever call him she because, you know, I'm going to take a political stand here. You know, you guys, that goes so far, and I've accepted gays and lesbians, but I'm not I'm not taking this further step to accept a trans person. So it's challenging. So, you know, we shouldn't want to sugarcoat it, but it sort of underscores that those of us that can, you know, grapple with this, even if we feel somewhat uncomfortable, that maybe, you know, through getting to know Chelsea Manning from her previous historic, heroic actions, we'll become more familiar with this issue. And I think that would serve us all good. And again, it underscores that, you know, if you're in that position, please do go to our website, BradleyManning.org, sign the petition to Obama, be part of our clemency appeal to the convening authority that can reduce her sentence going forward, and join us in demanding that the Fort Leavenworth authorities respect her wishes to begin hormone therapy as well, to allow her, you know, to begin that transition in a physical sense as well.
Well, Jeff, you've been great, and I'll just take a last word to say this, that what I would say to the Facebook people is, look, we're not asking you to accept anything. You said this was a great outrage. You're so upset. And now she changes her sexual identity, and you want what? For her to rot in hell? You want her, what do you want her to do? How deep was your commitment to his or her rights? I mean, this person did something phenomenally courageous for all of us. And if you can't deal with this, then don't deal with it. Just deal with what you said you cared about. But don't use this as the excuse, because that means your support for her or him was a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think we got to take these people on to say, yeah, we want to keep you on the team. This wasn't what we planned on, except for one problem. It's her life. So that's what it is. So you deal with it. She is now a very courageous person, a great person. And for those of us, and I'll speak for myself, who are not fully comfortable in the sense of comfort with this, it's our job to deal with it. It's not hers.
Well, and I would underscore, you couldn't have Bradley Manning, the person who went to prison for decades because of their conscience. And that's the same person who couldn't live with himself as a man anymore. And in order to be true to his conscience, he had to step forward and say, I'm actually Chelsea Manning. I'm a female. So you can't have this one historic act of conscience despite the consequences without having this new act of courage despite the consequences again without the other.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for your great work. And look, just remember something. What we have over everybody else is nobody ever said our work was boring. So take good care of yourself, brother. Very nice to have you on the show, and we'll do it again.
Take care.
Take care.